You're listening to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for joining us. So when you think of some of the happiest moments of your life, who's in those moments? Maybe those moments are when you're out going to see a movie with your friends, or you're playing in a friendly game of pickup basketball. Maybe it's when you're celebrating holidays like Christmas or Thanksgiving. This is all to say that when we do things with other people, we enjoy them more than when we do them by ourselves. That's because we are inherently social creatures. And as part of that, we just want to get along with other people. But importantly, we also want to get ahead of other people. We want to feel like we're getting further than the people that we know, the people in our lives. That's at least the thesis behind author Will Storer's latest book, The Status Game. In it, he argues that humans are wired, obsessed even, with status. That in everything we do, work or school, sports or volunteering, we are acutely aware of where we stand compared to others. And importantly, we also desire others' approval and affection. Now, that may seem obvious, but if it's true, it carries really deep consequences for us all. If it's status that drives us, then lots of other things maybe matter less. Under this model, people might become great scientists and business owners more for the adulation than the payout. Union workers might want dignity and respect more than they want raises. And voters might cast their ballots on behalf of their social outlook, where they think they stand in America, as opposed to what's in their best interest. Think about it. Think about all the people who vote against their material self-interest because they fear their own social group will lose out behind others. Now, if it's true that our drive for high status is critical to the human experience, it demands us asking some big questions. How can we prevent this desire to climb social ladders from getting the best of us? And how can we design a world that aligns with our desire for status without maybe hurting those closest to us? Are there other ways to think about our place in the world and our connection and relationship to other people? Will Storer is an accomplished journalist and a really great writer, and this book is absolutely fascinating, and I'm really pleased to welcome here with us on Detroit Today. Will, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Stephen. Thanks for that great introduction. Thank you.
So you argue that we're all in games where we're competing for status, and this is essentially all-encompassing. We can't get away from it. Describe what you mean by that, and also give us some really concrete examples of the kind of status-seeking you're talking about here.
Yeah, so I think it's important to kind of put aside some sort of common objections that come up when I talk about this. And I think some of the most common objections are that when we're talking about status, we're thinking about, I want to be rich, I want to be famous, and all these, all these kind of obvious things. That's not exactly what we're saying. I mean, what the feeling of having status is simply that we have value to other people. That's separate from being loved and liked by people, is that we're a valuable member of our tribe. And so what psychologists find is that is a fundamental, that if we're going to be psychologically and even physically well as people, if we're going to be happy and healthy, it's critical that we feel valued by other people. But of course, the question is, how do we know that we're valued?
Right.
And the answer is, in a million different ways. So, you know, the brain has what some psychologists call a status detection system. So it's constantly looking out at the world for clues, for evidence that we're valued, and it's constantly on alert for clues and evidence that people don't value us. And that's where this kind of, you know, unconscious obsession comes along. And, that, you know, that's why when, you know, when somebody might cut us up on the road, which is just, so what? It doesn't matter. It's common for people to get really upset, you know, irrationally upset about that, because the brain subconsciously takes that as a challenge to our status. There was quite a funny study that I quote in the book where they looked at people being poured measures of orange juice, and if you pour lots of measures of orange juice for people, but one person gets slightly less than the other people, that one person who got slightly less will become, you know, irrationally upset about the fact that how come I got less orange juice than everybody else? And that's because it's not just about, you know, I was shorted one mouthful of orange juice. I mean, who cares about one mouthful of orange juice? Obviously, you know, the brain is picking that up as a measure of status. And indeed, when researchers do studies on things like, you know, you mentioned in your introduction about union members, and, you know, there was a major study in the UK of 15,000 people, and they found that most people would forego a pay rise in order to have a job title that was more statusful, you know, so an uptick in job title. So there's lots of evidence there that actually, once we're earning enough money to survive and be okay and heat our homes and feed our children, you know, everything above that tends to be status.
Yeah. So when we think about status in that way, who are the people that are most important to us when we're thinking about how they think about us? I mean, I think, you know, all of us care what our families think about us, and all of us care what our friends think about us. But I think you're talking about something maybe a little different than that even. It is this sort of communal judgment, I guess, that we feel on ourselves all the time about, again, how important we are or whether we matter. Is it that we have this kind of abstract idea of people who we think of us in one way, and not so much the people that we actually have influence over and who matter in our lives?
Well, we care most about the people who are closest to us. So the people we share our lives with, you know, that's who we, you know, we're a tribal animal. We evolved in relatively small groups, and we care about what our group thinks about us. So as I say in the book, you know, we're not all competing with Michelle Obama or Beyonce. And if we were all competing with Michelle Obama and Beyonce, we'd just have a collective nervous breakdown, because there's just no way that we can compete with status on that level. You know, so the status game that I'm describing isn't one game. It's infinite games. And so you can think about any group that you're a member of in your life. It's going to be a status game. So whether you identify as a mum or a dad or as a member of a political party or as an employee of a particular group, or maybe you have a hobby or you play in a sports team, in every human group there's a kind of hierarchy. You know, depending on how well you play by the rules, how much you achieve in that group, your status goes up. The people look at you as if you are a more valuable individual. So it's the people that we're playing those games with that we care most about. You know, to answer your question directly, you know, it's the people we're playing sports with. It's the people that we are going to work with. And I think this is, you know, the book is much more about life outside the family. I think life inside the family, of course, there's power struggles and status struggles within families. Everybody knows, you know, that's true. but really, this is much more about, the book is much more about human social life. So it's about the political groups, it's about the hobbies, it's about the, you know, the jobs that we do, the sports games that we play. It's all that stuff. And the results in psychology are fairly significant that, you know, the more games we play, the happier and more stable we are emotionally. So because we have multiple sources of status in the world.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm talking with journalist and author Will Storr. He has a book out called The Status Game on human life and how to play it. We're talking about status and the role it plays in our lives, how much we think about what other people think about us and how that influences our decisions and our behaviors. We want to hear from you during this conversation as well. How much do you think the drive for higher status dictates our lives? Is that something you spend a lot of time thinking about, where you stand in comparison to other people? Is that something you react to frequently, the idea that perhaps your status is not quite where you think it should be, or maybe is falling in a way that you find distressing? Have you noticed yourself trying to get along with and succeed within a group that you think of as yours, the place where you think you belong in the world? What do you think is yourself at the healthiest level, I guess, of competition? Is that something that you relish, or is that something that you kind of dread and maybe have some anxiety about? We want to hear from you on the phones, 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to social media, to Twitter, and hashtag Detroit Today, and we can work you into the conversation that way. Also, give us a shout if you don't care about status. If you think you're somebody who just kind of does your own thing and doesn't really spend a lot of time worrying about what other people might think about you, let us know how that works and how you avoid, I guess, this status game that that we almost instinctively seem to play as humans. Again, 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter, hashtag Detroit Today, and we can include you in the conversation. Before we get to our listeners, Will, I want to talk about social media, because I think there is something about social media, both inherently and in terms of the way that we have come to use it, that makes it a really powerful influence on this. So first of all, on a platform like Facebook or Twitter, this idea of friends or followers and how many you have is absolutely, I mean, it's a very naked, I think, display of the kind of status that that I think people crave. And I think the mediums make us crave it even more. I mean, this constant checking of that is something that I feel lots of us do. But then in a broader sense, the idea of belonging and this idea of affinity groups, I think, is also reinforced by social media and maybe accelerated by it. It seems to me that you can't talk about this issue today without really acknowledging that things have changed because of social media.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, as you know, in the book, I talk about there are three different kind of types of status game. There are three different paths to status in the human world, or major ones. The first one is dominance, and that's what we share with, you know, lots of animals. You can force people with kind of aggression or the threat of it to attend to you in status. The second one is virtue. You can be a virtuous person. So you know, you can be somebody that follows the rules, enforces the rules, knows the rules. And then finally, with success and competence, you can be good at something. And you know, and this goes back, tens of thousands of years to the very beginning of, you know, human existence. Mm-hmm. And if you look at social media, that's what you see in social media. That's what social media is. It's those three types of status game: dominance, virtue, and success, played over and over and over again. And I think, you know, that kind of, to me, explains why social media has been so universally and suddenly successful, is that, you know, our need for status is universal. And so that's why it's as popular in China and, you know, Vietnam as it is in America and in the UK. It's cross-cultural, the success of social media. And it is really powerful because we love status, and it's a new way that we can get status. I mean, you know, you can be somebody that's just an ordinary person in an ordinary town living an ordinary life, but on social media, you have this huge amount of status. You have X amount of followers, maybe you've got a blue tick, which is a big status symbol, you know, you're a verified person. So for some people, social media becomes extremely important to them because status is extremely important to them, and it can be an enormous source of status for people.
Yeah, yeah. Again, 313-577-1019 is the number here. You can also go to Twitter, put comments there, and we'll work you into the conversation. I want to start with a social media comment. Big Neo says, what's it called when someone truly does not care about their status with others? He says, I've been an outsider my whole life, even within my own home growing up, and I really don't care about what others think about me. I did shout out to ask people who don't care about status to talk with us, Will. Is that believable? And I guess, how do we get to that, I guess, if that's the ideal, is to care less or to not care at all?
Yeah, I mean, it's not, I mean, for me, it's not, in a sense, I think it's definitely true that some people care more about status than other people. Like any human trait, there's a spectrum, and some people really, really care a lot about status. And certainly, you know, Beyonce, Jeff Bezos, Elon Musk, these are people that care a lot about status, and it's easy to see that they do that, much more so than the average person. And I would argue that it's that very kind of hunger for it, which is partly what's driven their amazing success. And they're a person like, you know, that like this caller who doesn't feel that they care about what other people think. But I think that for me they just care probably less than average what other people think. But it's not to say they don't care at all. I mean, for a start, they've taken the time to come in and tell us that they don't care about status. They seem to care what we think about their need for status. And just a basic observation that if you really truly didn't care about what other people thought about you, you'd probably be in prison right now because you wouldn't be following the social rules at all. Mm-hmm. I mean, status games are all about, you know, games are all about rules. Here's the rules by which we play and award status. And if you truly don't care about the rules of human social life, you're probably going to be in prison or a psychiatric hospital. So I totally understand why some people might feel that they don't care at all about what other people think. But my suspicion, my very strong suspicion, is that they do care, but they just care less than the average person.
Yeah, yeah. Let's go to the phones. Nancy in Dearborn, welcome to the show.
Hi, good morning.
Hey.
And thanks so much for this topic. I was actually thinking about this morning before I turned on the radio. I think in the arts and creative world in particular, many of us struggle to find voice, acceptance, approval. Mm-hmm. And then on the other level, I have a big concern about the tribal mentality in which we don't allow other people who are struggling for the same thing to be heard. And that has troubled me a great deal.
Yeah.
I'm trying to broaden, in my own life, trying to broaden the access to different voices and people's creative abilities.
Yeah. Nancy, I'm really glad you called and suggested that space as of particular interest. Will, you and I are journalists, we're writers. We haven't talked about the incredible influence of status in our line of work, which is creative, right? It is part of the creative world that Nancy's talking about. And I agree with her. I think it is particularly important in that world and can be particularly vicious. What is it about creativity, I guess, that drives us to really want approval, but also want to be in a category that we think is more exalted than where other people are?
Well, I think creative people, you know, like all people are, you know, we are pursuing status, but there's just different ways of measuring status. Like if you're a banker on Wall Street, or maybe a big shot lawyer, or say if you're a banker on Wall Street, you're measuring your status with how much money you make. It's a straightforward money-based game. But you know, Lord knows, in the creative industries, we know that money isn't the way that we really measure status. You know, certainly as a writer, as an author, isn't the way I can possibly measure status, because I'd probably want to throw myself out of the window. It's much more about, you know, what did the New York Times say about my book? Did they say anything about my book? And, you know, that is that kind of thing. That's how we're measuring status. So creative people are, I think, a really good example of the idea that status is more important than money to to people. Mm-hmm. You know, money isn't why you get into journalism, Lord knows. And, you know, when Nancy was talking, you know, the words that kind of that resonated with me was the idea of being heard, of, you know, especially Mara's my school, being heard. Mm. You know, the very act of being heard is a sign of status. Like in the groups in which we evolved, you know, one way that people, you could tell who were the high status people in that group, were that they were literally heard more. They spoke more, people attended to them more, they were listened to more. And I think that's so important to people. That's part of how people feel like they are of value. That people sit down and listen to them and listen to what they've got to say. So I think being heard is absolutely at the core of feeling like a human being who has status, who has value. And, you know, more power to Nancy if she's helping people who are struggling to be heard and, you know, have that essential experience of being alive.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to continue this conversation, this really interesting conversation with journalist and author Will Storr about his book, The Status Game. We'll also get to more of your social media comments and to you on the phones. Lizbeth in Detroit, Kathy in Ann Arbor. We will hear from you next. If you want to join them, 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. And again, you can go to Twitter, hashtag Detroit Today, and we can include you that way. We'll be right back with more Detroit Today. Today on 101.9 WDET, I'm Stephen Henderson. And as always, thanks for tuning in. My guest is Will Storr, a journalist and author who has a book out called The Status Game. Is taking a look at the way status, the way that we think of status, drives our decisions and our behaviors. The obsessing we do with what others think about us, the obsessing we do about which affinity groups we're a part of, and in some ways, which groups we can exclude other people from. We want to hear from you during this conversation as well. 313-577-1019 is the number on the phones. Tell us how this plays a role in your life, or if you think it does. Also, give us a sense of how you maybe counteract the influence of this notion of status in your life. What are the things that you do to try to make other things matter more? Again, 313-577-1019 is the number on the phones. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we'll work you into the conversation. Let's go to the phones here. Lizbeth in Detroit, what's on your mind?
Hey there. Yeah, I was calling in to say status is seriously a huge thing, not only in my family, but in my life. About a decade ago, I was on America's Next Top Model, lost majority of my hair, made it to like top six. That pretty much crippled me mentally when it came to the fashion world. Then, you know, my cousins, we start from Harvard, then Stanford, then Pepperdine, MIT, Carnegie Mellon. Myself, I'm currently attending Oakland University here in Michigan. You know, I did go to UT in Texas, but it's like, if you don't go to Harvard, you know, you're not nothing here. You know, it's like my grandmother is telling my 13-year-old daughter that she has to go to Harvard now. It's like the generation doesn't change. It's like, if you don't make it to the top, then you're not accepted. You know, it doesn't matter what part of the field you try, you know, school or fashion or anything, you know. And I'm a parent of two, and it's like, you never know, are you on the top or are you at the bottom? Where do you fit in?
Yeah,
you know, I don't know if education is most important, is beauty more important? You know, being a woman in America is pretty confusing.
Yeah. So it sounds like you've changed the way you kind of grapple with that over time, and I'm really sorry to hear about the fashion experience you had. How has that changed for you over time? Do you feel like you're better able to sort it out now than when you were younger?
It really messed up my identity. The status thing, want to be on top, you know, that was the whole motto of the show, and it's kind of like once I lost all my hair, I was called a transvestite by Zach Posen. A bunch of things happened that really crippled my mentality, and I didn't know where I fit in as a woman with no hair and a child that said I looked like Dada at the time. Mm. It was a very confusing moment in life. It's like, am I, you know, more masculine now? Is that my status? Am I more feminine now? Is that my status? You know, am I more of a dominant woman, a feminine woman? Do I play a more motherly role? Do I wear a dress with no hair? Like, it was very confusing. But then I pushed it more towards education, you know, because my family pushes education. Mm-hmm. You know, my cousin, I don't want to drop names, but she did graduate Harvard. She's been in Newsweek with Oprah, worked for Google. The next one down, he's a few months older than me, went to Carnegie Mellon. Very, very smart. Now he works for Dallas Cowboys in film directing. And so next is me, top model, and then had a child. Everything came to a crashing halt. And the one after me is Pepperdine. And the one after that, you know, it just goes on and on.
Yeah.
If you don't do your very best, you just aren't really accepted. And you get dropped like a fly. My family would never confess that out loud.
Yeah. I really appreciate the call and your candor here about the role that plays in your life. Really appreciate you calling in. Will Storr, this sounds very much like competition, you know, extreme competition, but it does connect to the idea of this idea of status. And what's interesting to me about the call is the difficulty kind of identifying you know, what status you're striving for and what you're trying to accomplish. I think there's a lot of that in our country right now.
Yeah, there's certainly a lot of that over in the UK too. And it's, you know, we are, you know, countries that kind of value, you know, what Elizabeth is describing there is competence-based success.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, in the book I call success games. And you know, the success games have driven modernity and civilization. You know, it sounds like Elizabeth's got some incredibly high achievers in her family who have made, well, and are making, you know, genuinely great contributions to society and culture. But with that comes a cost. And I think that's one of the sobering things for me when I was doing, you know, my research into the book was that you can have this very, very naive view of high achieving people who are perhaps quite wealthy and, you know, go to these great universities and have these great experiences. But life can be really tough in those worlds because they are so competitive. And as Elizabeth so eloquently describes, you know, when you're, if you don't achieve the minimum requirement for status in those groups, then you know, you don't have any status. And that, for any human being, is extremely disturbing and extremely upsetting.
Yeah.
The other thing that struck me from what Elizabeth said was that, you know, this idea of shifting from, you know, the fashion world into education. And I think that's a healthy approach. And as I said before, I think, you know, I think the reason that psychologists find that the more groups we belong to, the happier and more stable we are is because we have multiple sources of status. And I think that's one of the things I advocate for in the book is that, you know, when the going gets tough in the status game, do consider leaving. Find a new game to play.
Right.
You know, that's something that we learn as we grow up.
Right.
You know, one basic way that humans play for status is beauty. But it's very hard for somebody, you know, I'm 47. I don't look like I did when I was, you know, 21. And lots of us get caught up in trying to compete with the young in status games of beauty. And it's a game you can never win. And so, you know, I think part of the thing we learned through growing up is that we have to find different games to play, because otherwise it's just a recipe for, you know, misery and the feeling of failure.
Yeah. Again, Elizabeth, thanks so much for the call and again for your incredible candor. Let's go to Kathy in Ann Arbor. Kathy, what's on your mind?
Hey. Hi. I had a question about, he said that he was talking about status and how it plays out, games and stuff like that. But, you know, I'm really curious about, he said it's beyond when you're just trying to do survival, you know, just trying to meet your needs.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but so it just makes me curious about how it plays out from the multitudes of people who now are just trying, scrambling to survive. as opposed to people who have achieved so much that they have extreme amounts of power, and then they, you know, there's this class game going on, so that, you know, some people aren't even surviving, much less being able to play any kind of game. And then whereas other people are so competitive within their groups, they're not even acknowledging, they're not even recognizing, they're not even knowing that people can't afford home and shelter and food and stuff like that, because they're just too involved in their own status game.
Kathy, I love what you're saying here, and I really appreciate the call. Will Storr, we haven't talked a lot about how this all connects to the profound inequality that we live with in America and in the UK. Status is an aggravator, I feel, of that inequality.
I think one of the ways that this, the understanding how this works, changed the way I see the world in this sense. When you start off with that, with that understanding that we all need status, you know, and we really start playing these status games when we're in adolescence. That's when we sort of leave the family and join the groups. I think one of the reasons it's so difficult when you come from a lower socioeconomic group is that your sources of status are much more deprived. So if you're a middle class person or an upper class person who goes to university and they have this, they can choose the courses, they can choose the hobbies, they can choose the evening classes. You've got all this choice of, I can play this game, play this game, play this game. Mm-hmm. But when you're from a socioeconomically deprived area, you just don't have that choice. And that, to me, changed the way, you know, in the UK, and I know in the US too, you have similar problems with, you know, gang culture, with young men, especially from Islamic backgrounds, joining terrorist groups. You know, you've got to ask yourself, For these young men, need status like everybody else needs status. And if you're a young man growing up in South London, you know, on a difficult estate, what are your sources of status? You know, you can go and work in the local supermarket, stacking shelves, or you can join this gang that's dealing drugs. You know, if you want status, and people do want status, you're probably going to join the gang. And so that really changed the way that I saw, you know, we look at these kind of ideas as these behaviors as criminal, but from the perspective of status, you can also I think you know, see it with a bit more empathy and just understand that these are just young people with a paucity of options, and unable to get what they need out of the world because they have no choices. So yeah, I think you know, there's definitely that kind of political angle to all this, and I think I think it's a fascinating way of seeing some of the issues that are around you know, being socioeconomically deprived. It isn't just about money. You know, of course we need to survive, we need money to live and buy food and all of that stuff, but we also need to feel of value, and that's also a way that people can be massively impoverished, because the world makes them feel as if they have no value.
We've got about a minute and a half left, Will, but I want to give you a chance to talk about the kind of rules we should be constructing to lower the things that drive our obsession with status. How do we turn this in a different direction?
So, in the book, I sort of delineate, I kind of say what the kind of worst kinds of games are and the best kinds of games are. So for me, the worst kinds of games are what I call dominance virtue games. And those are the games where we're playing games of virtue, which sounds good. You know, it means that we are thinking in the moral space, we're enforcing moral rules on other people. But when it's mixed with dominance, it means that we're forcing other people to kind of attend to our particular moral codes. So you can think of the Nazis and the communists who are playing virtue dominance games, who are forcing other people to play by Nazi rules and play by communist rules. So the worst kinds of games are these dominance virtue games. And the best kinds of games are what I describe as virtue success games. So success games are about competence, about being really fantastic at something. And when you mix that in with a kind of virtue element, that means that you're competing for status by, you know, inventing vaccines that are going to, you know, get us out of the COVID pandemic. You're running a marathon for breast cancer. You know, you're using your competence and your expertise as a human being, your strength as a human being, to achieve some virtuous end. So I think we should be, you know, generally speaking, playing success games. I think there's too much emphasis on virtue. I know it sounds weird to say, but the world has changed for the better by people actually exercising competence by solving problems. Those are the people that are that really make the world a much better place, I believe. Yeah. And especially when you mix that in with this kind of virtue thing. So, you know, it's not really about being Elon Musk. It's about being Elon Musk, you know, with a bit of a halo. Yeah. Those are the best games.
Yeah. Okay. Will Storr, it was really great to have you here with us on Detroit Today to talk about your book and to talk about the influence of status in all of our lives. Thanks so much for joining us.
No, thank you. It's a pleasure. A great conversation, and thanks to all the callers.
Yes, yes. Okay, that is going to do it for us this week. Tune in on Monday. We're going to talk about a new book about why many immigrants to the U.S. succeed after they've moved to this country. Really important topic here in Southeast Michigan, given all the people we welcome to our community from all over the world. Of course, next week is election week as well, and we will continue talking about the August 2nd primary on Election Day, of course, but then on the day after, we'll sort through all the results. This is 101.9 WDET-FM, Detroit's NPR station, your connection to news, music, and conversation. We'll talk again on Monday.